Blog Talk Radio.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
Thank you.
right there. Good evening, good evening, good evening, and welcome. Welcome to another edition of Soul Tree Radio on the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram. And as always, it's good to have you in the house. Soul Tree Radio, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Associates of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good shit. The who, what, when, where, why, and how, right here, right now, at www.basnnewsroom allonephrase.com. Shout out to the members of the Brotherman Network who will be appearing here in the Ranyon. And as always, as we get close to 1,700 shows, as we get close to 1,700 shows, we say thanks to almost over 11 years of being on air. That ain't bad, gang. You're doing all right. But one thing that's peeled off from it is that we've had other shows come off of Soul Tree and earn their own beef. And I'm speaking to my brother, Gary Dawes Gray, who does the Gray Level Pool on Saturdays. We have one group of listeners peel off into the other show and vice versa. And it stirred up a good fan base. It also stirred some passionate debate on some topics. As my brother Gary's in the background and doing his thing as usual. What's up, G?
I know, brother. It's baseball and dog days now. We're getting ready to get into dog days.
I hear that. Well, before we get into that, we must go back. We must go back to Saturday as we were talking about a subject that seemed to have worn itself out, but was like Dracula, would not die. Without a stake in the heart. And then happened to be Ja Morant. And I got cut off, and so Soul Patrol said that when the program ended suddenly, and of course, they do that on Blog Talk from time to time. But the issue was the whole point of Morant not being ready for prime time. He's not, and he won't be. And maybe his time will come in the near future or the later future. We don't know. We do know that his time ain't now. And we were comparing it to that of LeBron James, who we all know is the cash cow. As we talk about that, you have to understand there was a dependability that came with LeBron. Now, he had home training. He knew what to do, not just in the social world, but in the business world. He balanced it nicely, and the fact that he could play a little basketball helped out in the long run. Now, we've had others do work like the Admiral David Robinson built a school in Texas. We've had others do...
Matumbo doing what? Building a school in Africa.
Matumbo builds a school in Africa. And in other words, others who have come on and picked up the mantle and carried on a charitable way, but also in a human way. They show the human side, and they put the NBA's best foot forward by doing so, as my brother Tony McClain is in the mix. But the thing we have to remember is when LeBron came out and did this, he did this because he knew the microphones, the cameras, all eyes were on him. And this was before he put on a jersey and even got on the court. They were watching to see how he handled things. He probably was under more scrutiny watching what was done in the boardrooms of the world, then on the back court to the world. And he came through with flying colors. Matter of fact, he was so great in his deportment that they said, wait a minute. There's no sense trying to destroy the guy. No sense giving him drugs or women or whatever it is. He's making us money. That's what he did. And so they left him alone. They said, you know what? We should leave him alone and let him make us money. And that's exactly what they did. In the case of Morant, Morant had a growth spurt of some sort career-wise with his scoring and playing ball. But he did not have a growth spurt in terms of common sense. If anything, Ja Morant, you know, I like nicknames because they imply inclusion, but my nickname for Morant is Ja Just Stinks because he does stink. As a human being, he's fucked up big time. And the fact that he stinks doesn't change the fact that he can't clean this up down the road. But at 23, he ain't ready. Maybe at 26, he will be ready. Maybe if Memphis gets to a final or wins a title, he'll be ready sooner. But the curtain is drawn on this, and those in the inner circle have decided Morant ain't ready to handle a $600 million empire. So sit him down, make the bench your home, and we'll wait and see. In the meantime, if somebody else emerges, we'll keep an eye out. But they're going to get what they can get out of LeBron James until there's nothing else more to get. And there really isn't that much else you can say behind that. You got to trust the fact that these guys know what they're doing when it comes to making money and taking money. They do not have the, I got to say, the discipline to want to entertain a new notion. They want business to carry on as is and needs to stay that way. Any deviation in that, they consider unacceptable. Is that a fair assessment, everybody?
Yeah, well, and also I think now with what's going on, LeBron, and what has gone on, it somewhat mirrors Mr. Woods over in golf in the sense of early on there was the resentment. Matter of fact, I think in many ways there still is resentment even after
all these years.
But I think they also see what it all comes. I always talk about the greedy bastard factor, and that's always prevalent in all the major sports. And I think, especially with LeBron, we make the whole thing about the cash cow, but it's beyond that now. It's beyond that now because, in a sense, we have to start thinking about when, because, he's been doing this for 20 years now. Yeah, there's the rumor of him waiting around for a Bronny, but that, if it happens, great. If it doesn't, that's still going to be fine either way.
Exactly.
But it's been a begrudging sort of way. He's unfortunately, he won't be appreciated until he plays his last game. And what'll be ironic is the quote unquote LeBron James of the next era will be they always say, well, he's no LeBron James. Well, you didn't appreciate him when LeBron was there. Just like you didn't appreciate the guys from back in the day that now you're lauding. the NBA will be, you know, when the thing about the NBA, and it gets a lot of slings and arrows and what have you, but the one thing that is unmistakable, and it hit me when they did the 50th anniversary a few years back. The league has survived Wilt retiring. The league
yes.
has survived Russell retiring. The league
yes.
has survived Dr. J retiring. The league has
yes.
survived, you know, Kareem retiring. The league has
right.
Survived Magic's premature retirement. The league has survived Michael's 15 retirements. The thing is, the league endures. The league endures.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think in a lot of instances, it's sort of like Beyonce. You either love the hell out of it or you hate the hell out of it. There's really no middle ground with the NBA, but it's thrived all these years. And, you know, we can go back, you know, we can have a separate conversation in regards to the level of play compared to 5 to 10 years ago. That's another show in and of itself. But the one constant, whether it was the 50th anniversary or whether it's the 75th anniversary, the league endures. The league has endured.
Yep.
When you think of all the eras, I mean, look, the league survived its darkest days of having their championship game being played on tape delay. The league survived the drug scandal. It's the league, you know, the league has thrived over the years, post, you know, before David Stern, after
yep.
David Stern. So the league will survive. I think that
mm-hmm.
that's the one thing.
Right.
The next quote-unquote LeBron may or may not be on the current roster now. You know,
true
a lot's
that.
Being made of this of Victor, I guess, Watanabe, whoever's going to be the Spurs' number one overall pick in a couple
yes.
of nights.
Wembanyama.
Yeah, thank you. Personally,
Victor Wembanyama.
Personally, I hope they take him to a Fatburger, if there are any Fatburgers in San Antonio, so he can be ready.
Ralph Sampson, 1.7.
And he may be even small. And to be quite honest, he looks smaller. He looks physical. I mean, height-wise.
He's leaner, than Ralph. He's a lot
yeah.
leaner than
yeah,
Ralph.
He
he's tall,
looks,
super lengthy and long.
He looks
but
very,
we've
very
seen,
thin.
We've seen Ralph Sampson. And
yeah,
Ralph Sampson
yeah, I mean,
was better coming out of college than Wembanyama's coming out of the French European leagues.
Well, right now,
right.
Well, I mean, at this point, you know, Ralph Sampson looks like Tony Fields compared to this guy, and I'm dating myself.
So in other words, Ralph Sampson at 7'4", who could handle the rock, shoot from the perimeter, is Wembanyama's. But Ralph left with really bad knees. The problem
true.
With Wembanyama, he'll have moments. He'll have a lot of moments because the length is just, you know, unusual. Yet the physicality of the NBA is just such an issue.
And I'm not even going to harp on the whole Euro thing too, which is another thing he's going to have to overcome as well. So,
well, building
you know,
on your NBA Thrive point, it's because it's an international game. I mean, NBA Africa is really thriving, and if you look at the last most valuable players, they're all from overseas. So
sure.
LeBron mm-hmm. has been nudged anyway, right? He still has his factor in terms of what he's doing, but with LeBron James, he's just one of those clearly undefinable players, and so he doesn't have, quote-unquote, the cachet and the overall, like, complete likability factor. That's why the judgment is what he is. Sometimes he's just too smart, but you're leaving the game as the all-time leading scorer. I don't know how you can argue with that. I mean, you know, no one's going to break that particular record. And that's done without Kareem being able to shoot three-pointers, which shows you how good Kareem was because he only had one three in his entire career. But when you walk away from the game as the all-time leading scorer in league history, no one can chase it. That's going to stay in the wild because the money they pay players, they're not going to play 20 years anymore. LeBron
right.
dedicated himself to do that. So he's in that, like, a most unique class and category in so many different capacities. So he's, in a sense, an undefinable type, incomparable player, not only on production, because as a pass-first player, you're still the leading scorer in the NBA all time, which is bizarre. You know what I'm saying? You're not, you know, Kobe has got more field goal attempts than anybody in NBA history, right? Kobe's gunning for that record and played a long time with the same franchise as the focal player. He could not outpace Kareem, right? And so what James has done with four different teams he's played for. So the other unique factor, too, when you look at the great players, typically at the end of their careers when they usually end up, you know, playing for another team, right? Like, you know, Willie Mays ended up with the Mets and not the Giants. Montana ended up with the Chiefs. You know, Jerry Rice, I think he ended up with Seattle, right? After
the Raiders.
Yeah, right. So
he got to Seattle, and then I think
he got cut at Denver. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
Emmitt Smith
ended up with Arizona, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and so Jordan,
Franco Harris with Seattle, Tony Dorsett with the Broncos,
Seattle, and then Orlando.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Dominique was not in it as a Hawk. So these Larry Bird types, Kobe types, Magic types, West types, Baylor types, same franchise their entire career. Even Wilt bounced around, right? Warriors. Kareem played for two franchises as well. So the Buck factor of great athletes is always mixed. Very rare. You know, Peyton ended up with the same career. You know, Barry retired early with the same squad. You know, but for the most part, these guys bounce around. Brady, you know, despite all his New England fame, right? You know, Tampa Bay. You see what I'm saying? So, and, you know, I mean, Jackie Robinson retired other than go to the, you know, to the Giants, right? Because that's who the Giants. Even Babe Ruth started with the Red Sox. You know what I mean? So
and
you look
ended,
at
and ended with the Boston and ended with the Boston Braves.
Yes, sir. So you look at the historicals. You know, LeBron's played for, you know, three different franchises, right? Lakers, Heat, Cleveland twice. We all know about the Dan Gilbert fusillade and how the runaway slave clause he tried to invoke and shit, you know, when he went to Miami and all that kind of stuff like that. Then he went back. It's still a debatable reason of why he did that, you know what I mean? But, you know, behind scenes.
No way he went back.
Yeah, well, you know, allegedly, officially, he did it for Cleveland. That's
Eric,
the so-called smoking gun.
If I can, it's the dependability factor that I was talking about at the beginning here. You know, the league had understood that here was someone they could depend on. You could depend on the bone, selling soft drinks, just as easy as you could sell him playing against Milwaukee as the Cavaliers were on the road or when Miami was playing wherever. You know, they were constant. You knew what you were getting when you got LeBron. There was no deviation or undulation whatsoever. That's what made it work for him. You know, the league can't say what's to come. Like you have Professor Eric Satterwhite in the house. You know, you don't know.
Well, the league's shifting, right? The league already created the shift with the push with the European factor, right? Because, again, Jokic, Antetokounmpo, Embiid, your last MVP, all overseas.
True.
All right, so they've shifted, man. They've already stealthily. You realize that's not the futuristic, and they've already created that global game, and global China is a whole nother thing. And then LeBron's impact in China, I mean, Kobe was in, you know, over the top in China. LeBron has interesting affiliations with China as well. So NBA China is just this global thing. But then when China pushed back on those comments from that, what, asshole GM that's now with Philly, he used to be with Houston when he made some comments, right? Trying to start clipping shit, right? Start clipping a whole lot of NBA money. That bothered them more than anything LeBron could do.
That
money coming from there. And so the thing is, when you look at in the NBA Africa, pay attention to that. If you look at what they're doing on a global basis, and how your top picks again is coming from overseas. They've already shifted like a little local universal focus to a global focus, and they had a Denver-Miami NBA final, right? And so they were able to move forward without any big, you know, so-called NBA market team playing for it all, which is what their goal is anyway. If they can have an Indiana Pacer, Phoenix Sun, or whomever else final moving forward, as long as they move over, they're still going to cachet out.
Right. Right. They're still cachet out, but there still is the individual factor of who's the face of the league. Now, you can look at the NBA logo and know that's Jerry West, even if you don't play basketball. You can look at what the league has done in gaining worldwide popularity, and you can see that LeBron James has been the face of the league. But now, as LeBron has turned in gray, who's going to be there to stay as the poster boy? And this combination of youth and common sense has not met a person yet to fill that position in terms of the NBA, because you got some folks that just don't know no better.
LeBron creates a lot of the dialogue and the conversation. Mm. Like this year was about pursuing being the NBA's leading scorer, and I'm glad that he accomplished that, because when Kareem made his comments, as opposed to being like, you know, a leader of young men and having the right kind of conversation about being a mentor to the young brothers, you know, he was kind of a lot of very anti-James, you know. So there's no fanboy in me for LeBron James, you know, or any other NBA player, athlete, because I think that can get concealed. When you start looking at the on-floor performances and what he's been able to do. See, the moment the NBA, which always pushes the envelope about winning championships more than any other sport before you start, who's going to win the title? Are they built for the title? LeBron's teams have missed the playoffs. They played into the play-in games. They got swept in the first round. So from the team component, even though you're in that market, still to this day, with the impact and even winning a bubble championship, it's still a Kobe town. Right, so he's not filtered in to that component, or never really has been, which to me is the uniqueness of the player that he is, because of what he's been able to accomplish on the floor. So the NBA face of the league right now usually is always built around your NBA. Now, you'll use the different tools. You'll use the Durant. You'll use these other players. You'll talk about Kyrie like a dog, even though Kyrie stands up and does his part, you know, this, that, and the other. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And Kyrie will move the needle in a lot of different scenarios as well, but that's always some kind of negative reporting around that. James is always a coin flip, you know, which way to go. But the NBA, by and large, and players involved, even when Memphis was, you know, stepping to him, he's never really pushed that needle in that direction, which, again, is his uniqueness as a player. But the NBA has already shifted is marketing energies and this, that, and other players. And even when he does advertisements, he does a lot of sponsoring, a lot of movie production work, a lot of stuff of that matter, which a lot of people thought was the reason he went to L.A. for business purposes as well. Yet, you know, LeBron doesn't care about none of that shit, you know, by and large, which I like about him. You know, so, you know, matter of fact, it doesn't matter. So he's in a different spectrum. But as far as seeing him totally as a chip for the NBA, needle moving, he matters, but they will make it happen. Like, I mean, I've seen Chicago. We all remember Chicago. You couldn't get within 5 feet of Jordan without them blowing a whistle for a call. You
That's
know what
right.
I mean? Because he couldn't get within an inch. You know, if he got within 2 feet of Jordan and he missed a jump shot, oh, you had to foul him. No way he's missing on his own. You know what I mean? Because he just had the support, league support, rule change LeBron never had, you know what I'm saying, in terms of that capacity. So the thing is, LeBron never really, as much as he's done, I think he just falls into the category of just being the smart jigger as far as they're concerned. And so there's that resentment there. So Kobe said it best. The same thing that what they love LeBron for, it's the same reason they hate him.
Yeah, exactly. But love or hate, the one thing they can't change is he's safe. You can go to sleep and wake up the next morning and know that the league is going to be in the same shape because LeBron didn't do anything stupid the night
Correct.
Before.
Absolutely.
And that's what makes him valuable. And Fred, the common sense factor seems to be blessed in other folks who happen to be young, dumb, and dribble the basketball. And good evening.
Good evening. First and foremost, one of my this is not one of my better conversations, but I'll throw a couple of peas in the pot and we'll see what we can get out of it. Because one of my contentions was during the latter stage of the season, because I'm not into my Mount Rushmore. I saw Mount Rushmore with four players on it, and the first thing I thought about is there's none of the old heads there. The foundation of the dean is being either overlooked or just flat out ignored. So, my thing was, what's the big deal? And then I take it a step further. This year, because I don't know who the player of the year was last year, but I know this year was some white guy, a clutch European guy. And right. I had a couple of conversations with people about it. I said, I finally figured out that the Euro step is two steps forward, two steps back with the ball in your hand. As long as they play the better players, the Oakleys and so forth, and Wallace. They're both guys from some HBCUs. I worked deans with both of them as collegians. But I said the thing that I noticed is those guys are not being born into the league because, hey, they're going to actually play defense. And with that in mind, I watched some highlights from this one of the games, the last two or three games. And I was showing my friend of mine, why is this guy playing post-defense? He's standing at the little circle, but his hands are at his side. He's not playing defense. He's watching.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I think, they have Euro-sized the game to the point where more and more white guys can come in and play.
You're correct.
And
the rule changes that help that as well, the three-point shooting mainly.
Right, because when Dirk, did Dirk ever – how many dunks did Dirk have? Because he never got close enough to the basket.
Kareem called him a one-trick pony. Based on
right.
your style of play.
And,
you're correct. The game has been completely morphed where the Europeans can thrive in it through the international game. You're correct. So people are not watching the NBA of the Bird Magic era at all. It's completely shifted with slick rule changing, the type of coaches they bring in, and the love affair with perimeter play. Right, and I've always shared, Wilt would talk about this, too. I've mentioned this many times, that if you take a field goal attempt, previous years, right, you're talking about Mount Rushmore player, it's a field goal attempt, period, FGA statistic-wise, right, field goal attempt. Yet they marginalized it. If you shoot behind the arc, that's a total separate percentage than shooting mid-range inside the arc.
Right.
So in other words, if I go 10 for 15 mid-range and 4 for 4 from 3, I have two different field goal percentages. That is bullshit.
Yep,
it's the same
field
goal attempt. You follow what I'm saying? So that's what changed. And so to your point with the morphing of the game, sure, the ABA had the three-point, commodity, right? That's what they came in the league, right? The ABA brought that in for, fan building, the red, white, blue ball, great marketing tool. The NBA morphed that in, and that's why I always say, a person asks about the all-time leading scorer, I say, well, Kareem only shot one three, made one three in his entire career. LeBron played his whole career under three, and he played longer, but it goes to show you just how weaponized what Kareem did without having that assistance and not having that type of game. Right. So in other words, it's been bastardized in terms of those particular segments of how, like, they break down and segment these shooting games. So now there was about, it's been a good percentage of NBA players, like Steve Kerr, without the three-point shot would never make the NBA, ever.
Matter of fact, without the three-point shot, he would have struggled to even make Davidson's.
Exactly. I concur. And so then you get the guys that just totally blow the game out of proportion, like a dude like Curry, who's just, you know, his father was a marksman. He's been around the game since he's a little kid. You know, so his gift of shooting, which is undoubtedly a gift of shooting, I've seen it live, that's a gift of shooting, period. You know, I mean, there's nothing that can water that down. But it's inside the game, the way the game has changed. It's been adulterated, right? And so, you know, Chamberlain could score 100 without shooting one three-point shot. These guys are not going to approach 100. When Kobe dropped 81, right, I guess that's the second most. I don't know. He may have had 12, 13 threes against Toronto that game, right, to get 81. You know, and so Will had 100, right, in four quarters. And now, so you know, it's the game has been shifted and changed. The marketability, it's pure marketing. You watch the NBA nowadays, it's like the skill levels of the players, quite frankly, there's a nice man probably on Portland, right? There's a nice man on Portland right now from an athletic skill game standpoint would make Casey Jones and Sam Jones just, you know, look ridiculously bad players, to be frank. Right, based on the athleticism, the training, the conditioning, things of that sort, it's spooky, crazy good in terms of athleticism. But in terms of, to what Fred's talking about, the understanding of the game, the coaching component, the fundamental factor is totally missing. And so the Euros do the fundamental thing. They come in, it's still the same game. They ref it a certain way. These refs are slick. So you're just looking at a real slick production when you watch the NBA, then you're watching it from a pure basketball factor. And so LeBron has all those skill sets, that is size. You don't see it. I mean, right now he's bigger than Russell, you know, would be, right? You know, he could outrun Russell. Russell was a great runner. He was a great track athlete. He could probably run really well, but he couldn't do anything with LeBron on the perimeter and outside just based on skill sets, right? And he was not a good scorer. So in other words, but in the team game concept, he's really effective. So we can dissect this like a zillion ways of what it is, but to your point, yeah, the production is mass. The athletic parameters is different. The game is played a different way, but it's Euro-sized. It's a Euro-sized version.
Yes, it are.
I mean, Joe he cannot thrive. I mean, could you see Kareem wearing him out? Kareem would just wear him out. You know what I mean? Yeah. But because of the way they play, yes.
If Kareem was if the game was as it is now, and Kareem was going to play, see, Kareem could make the adjustment, and we saw that when Kareem had to play somebody like Willis Reed.
Mm-hmm.
Reed cut his teeth as a power forward, so
correct.
He could face the basket. And you know, and when he decided to. It was nothing for Kareem to step out and take a jump shot, but he was not going to go out and make try a three pointer or anything necessarily.
Mm-mm,
but you know,
didn't have to exactly.
But look at it this way too. Think everybody forget the fact that Kareem could throw sky hooks all day from anywhere on the court, and
yes,
he would hit. He hit a percentage that was phenomenal. But what do the marketing steps in? Oh, it's not a pretty shot.
They're crazy. Yeah, it was too graceful.
It's
and
not
fundamentally
a shot.
Perfect. Yeah.
It went against every basketball non-novice idea of what basketball
is. It was beyond them, T-Mac. You're correct. It was beyond them.
Think about this. Now, remember, they banned the dunk because of him coming into college ball. Now,
correct.
You got to know that people were thinking, oh, this is going to change. So all he did was arguably come up with, and I will argue this to the day, you know, the most explosive offensive weapon in all of professional sports.
Unequivocally. You're correct.
You know, it's beyond the Packers' power sweep. It's beyond, you know, the shift for baseball.
A Joe Frazier left hook, an Ali jab,
exactly.
a home jab.
It's in all those years, it stood on its own greatness, and to a certain extent, it still does. Because think about this. And again, if you want to buy into this as Jabbar being the greatest player of all time, that's another debate. But see, here's the thing. No player in the history of the NBA has had a more unique and more impactful single play than the Skyhook. The Skyhook has won championships. And mm-hmm. you would think that, and Mike and me have talked about this so many times, you would think that pretty much every center or every player that can chew gum
Thank
and is
you.
Over 6'11" would have
exactly.
tried to have picked up the sky.
There's a problem with that, though. See, there's a problem with that, right? So let's get into that, right? So, in other words, you know, back to the scout game, you know, I've done mock drafts, you know, we've covered them in the past, right, about players, you know, we've been like spot on. We had a Black Athlete Sports Network's mock draft from 20 years ago, and then Mike was at that actual draft, and it was like, mm-hmm. you know, rhythm, you know what I mean? So, you know, we've got this documented facts into the analysis. The problem with, see, when you have a tall player, Frankenstein is this because he understands the things too, and Mike, well, all of us do, about kinesiology. So when you have a tall player, right, and they have bad hands and the bad feet, there's nothing you can do about that coaching-wise because it's in the nervous system. You know what I mean? That's right. All genetics. So Kareem had this fluid. He started off playing baseball like Hakeem, right? Hakeem was out there dancing when he was playing. You know, he was bringing the rhythms of Nigeria on his footwork, right? You still have players that would come and work.
Remember, he was a soccer goalie.
Yes, and they would, but he's from the motherland, right? And it's a whole different level of rhythm, you know. And so the thing is, Dwight Howard, a number of players have improved their game working out with Hakeem. Hakeem could teach them for 2 years, and they would never master his footwork and his rhythm. That's what he just had. You know what I mean? So the thing with Kareem is when you're wheeling and you're doing a pirouette, you have to be in full alignment. He's throwing primarily right-hand sky hooks, and you know it's coming. But the way that his coordination was, the way that he used his feet, he always wore low tops. It's another story. We can talk about the NBA's current use of low tops and all the ankle injuries
that
they had.
Right.
Everyone
that's
wore high tops back then, right, for ankles. Now these guys wear low tops everywhere because it's called the kicks era. So they're selling shoes for their masters who they're wearing their footwear for, where people can now wear a suit and sneakers and shit. They call them kicks and whatever they may be for $500, bullshit leather shoe that they just put a name on. So the NBA players pushed that model because they're wearing kicks. Where before, you look at Dr. J, he's have a high top that was 3 inches extra in terms of the marketing value, so he could have that support, pretty much like a boxing shoe, mini boxing shoe for the ankle support. So Kareem could pirouette. Now, he was a jazz man. So he listened to that jazz. So he was on this rhythm and this mindset and this intellectual thing that he was doing from a coordinated level. That was the lethality. So these guys, you can teach them a skyhook. If they don't have the same protocols, nervous system components, kinesiology, pure balance, plus Kareem trained with Bruce Lee. As a student at UCLA.
Yes, he did.
So he had the martial arts. He did yoga. The Eastern arts, which, again, originated in Africa, to keep it 1,000. But the point of the matter, he brought all those timing mechanisms, martial arts, basketball balance, supreme intellect, and he could dictate that on the floor. And that's what they were dealing with in that sky hook. So it was almost like he was a basketball effing samurai when he started throwing that thing from the baseline, top of the key. But you have to bring in all those factors of the yoga, the martial arts, the wooden coaching, the training, and the natural capabilities of his own physiology, packaged in one dude. And the other thing that he did exceedingly well, he didn't mind playing tall. A lot of guys slouch. They want to shoot threes and shit. Kareem would always play long and tall, but he got that from Wilt. Because if you watch Wilt, Wilt would grab the ball in the post for the Globetrotter days, and you would see how he would Statue of Liberty put the ball way up in the air and hold it. Kareem did that as well.
And Eric, you never had to ask, gee, if this is such a successful move, why aren't others knowing how to do it? No one bothered to learn the skyhook because
they
it was too much work.
About the only other player that I can really remember that really went out of his way to use it in his rep, and oh, by the way, he won an NBA championship was the guy that was his running mate those last
Magic.
Few years.
It was Magic. And they called it a junior sky because Magic doesn't have a jumper. Right, he can't pull off the dribble. But he can get into the lane and mimic as best he can because he will use his length inside. Now, you can, there's certain things that, listen, and this is real. Many people have tried to teach people the sky hook, so they could not do it, so it became a shortened version like the jump hook, right? So you see a lot of guys throw the jump hook. But to get into that whole pendulum, swinging, supreme balance and rhythm, I mean, when I watch Kareem, he like Hakeem's dancing. Kareem is just on a pendulum. The motion, the flow, the accuracy, and releasing at the top of the hook. You know what I'm saying? He released it at the top of the level, at the top of the arch, and you knew it was coming. And to your point about like shooting percentage, this is the other thing when you talk about Mount Rushmore. So Wilt played 13 years, right? And so when Wilt left, he left us the all-time leading scorer in NBA history in only 13 years. But Wilt did something that, you know, again, you know, he outdistances people, you know, in his own way. He shot 72% in his 13th year.
Yeah.
72%.
I don't even think the only other collectors can shoot that have that. That's the crazy part about it.
72%.
Yes. 70, yeah. Look, he's still look. I defy anyone to try and average 50 a year. You know, I don't think
Well, average 48.5 minutes a game. That means you played the entire season, every game in a minute.
Really?
The reason why it's 48.5, there was a couple of overtime games.
Yeah,
right.
Load management, my ass.
Hey, I got to take a day off. We got to get it right. We got to wonder about our schedule system. We got private jets, private planes, personal chefs, projectors.
Yep.
And these guys are wearing Chuck Taylors, averaging 48.5. They're not built the same.
Exactly. You know, when you were talking about the footwork, I'm reminded of. I know it's a different sport, but I'm just on the footwork. And Bill Walsh would always talk about how he evaluated quarterbacks, and he would always look at the footwork because it's about a thing of balance more than anything else. And that's the thing. That's the thing. I forget where I saw it, but somebody did just basically like a 2-minute video on one of Kareem sky hooks, and he went into each aspect, you know, the footwork, the balance, the finesse, like you said. I mean,
correct.
It was literally and figuratively the perfect storm, and that's why I've always said that when you think about the most, you know, offensive move in all of professional sports, there's nothing that that even comes close to that. As violent a swing as Gary Sheffield has, you know, there's no way that it can compare. I mean, I get an aneurysm just thinking about Gary Sheffield swinging. Oh, what if his check swing?
A guy like Sheffield didn't have the torque. That was too much torque. So you're going to flame out, right, and get injury, because if he could have channeled that in a more smoother rhythmic, type of a flow like Bonds. You know, Bonds could just sit in the pocket.
Or Junior.
Right, yeah, yeah. Junior too. But Junior, I mean, having seen Bonds live a few times, it's just totally different, man. When he sits in that batter's box, it's different, right? It's just different. You know, he's not even swinging. The way he posts up in that batter's box, you can just say, ah, shit. I mean, them pitchers don't have a chance.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
You know, when they would let that rock go, that 73 home run season, was it 73? He had 73.
73,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, 73, right? I've
yep.
seen him that season, you know, a couple of games. And, you know, of course, they walked him like 4 zillion and 12 times. And in the Giants sense, would hang those chickens up, right, to show all the times
yeah.
they walked him on pictures. Because that's literally what it was. But
yeah.
man, anything around the plate that year, anything within proximity – was going out the park.
And remember,
literally.
Eric, and remember, Eric, he was basically getting on an average maybe one or two pitches to
one
hit.
Pitch.
I concur.
Night. You know, that's another, you know, we look at the 73 and whatever. But the thing is, I forget how they broke it. Like, on an average night with 4 at-bats for a major leaguer, you're basically going to get, say, 10 to 15 pitches to hit.
Yeah, his on-base percentage was insane,
yes.
right? In
yes.
a number of career
yes.
walks.
Like 1.85.
Yes. And remember,
yeah,
he didn't even get half of the 10. He would maybe get one or two. You factor in all the intentional walks and just the regular walks because guys just didn't want to be the guy. He was basically on a given night, he was literally getting one to two pitches to hit. And
literally.
He was not only hitting them, he was putting that Bugs Bunny screaming liner thing on.
Correct.
That's
right. And so what's the common now? So you talk LeBron, you talk Kareem, we talk about these lethal things. They're unteachable, and that's where they escape the imagination of these other people because you really can't box them up. Ali's footwork, no one, Ali's coordination at a man his size was just not seen. When Ali got off his high horse's wheel, his dance, he was all reflex. You know, as a child, his brother Rahman, who spent more minutes with him than anybody, right? If you see Ali in any film, you see his brother Rahman side by side.
Mm-hmm.
Rahman's still out there, right? He's still living. He's going through some challenges. But Rahman knows, and Rahman talks about when they were kids, you know, he would want, they'd be in the backyard, and you would throw rocks at Ali, and you couldn't hit him. He'd actually ask you to throw rocks at him. So he was his eye coordination, since he really didn't block punches with his arms, was all slipping. And you'd always miss him by a millimeter. So when he slowed down with reflex-wise, that's when, you know, he started getting caught because he really didn't have that reflex.
Yeah.
That's when he started getting caught. But in his early days.
You don't realize those three years that were taken away from him, how much
he got heavier.
Yeah.
And plus he got caught up with some other shit. But the point of the matter from a physiological standpoint, the natural instinct standpoint, I mean, I've seen him, I watched the fight, you know, I love old fights anyway because these guys have crazy skills and smaller gloves and all that. But he was, I think it was at his peak. He still, you know, freshly Ali, he finished off lifting the first time. And he goes into the ring, and all of a sudden when he gets into the ring, he just starts, you know, shuffling and moving. Crowd just starts going
bananas. Was that the first title fight in 64?
Yeah, I think he was fighting someone like Zora Fowley, or it could have been Patterson, or one of them type of dudes, right?
Zora Fowley was the last fight before the three-year
I thought Cleveland Williams was the most devastating.
That's Peak Ali, Cleveland Williams.
I mean, that's, you don't see that, man. And so you can't teach what Ali did and shit. So they had to water him down, you know what I'm saying? With, you know, then he got caught up in the other stuff. But as far as the skill set, they knew what they were looking at when they seen Ali. You know, it was just too lethal.
Oh, yeah.
It was too powerful. You know, and so this is what happens to these brothers, man. They're just bigger than what the shit is. So LeBron, you know, where, you know, he's a very fascinating person in many ways. One thing I do like about him in terms of the clean living, and we can talk about his hoop exploits all we want, But, you know, he's 100% representative of a brother as a black man, 100%.
Yes.
There's no coin flip of what LeBron
he's
is.
He's never been farted in public.
You know, he's no coin flip what he is. And I love the fact that in his intellectual capacity, the way he measures himself, he knows people don't understand him, and he really doesn't give a fuck. And you know what I mean?
Exactly.
I like that component because he's not trying to explain that shit to anyone. He never explains himself. He never explains his actions. He never explains his investment. He never explains his support as a black man for his children, for his wife, for his family, for his community. He understands as an example. He doesn't care if you clearly identify. He's dedicated himself to his craft and all those things like that. That's what puts him in a total different category. He is literally in an incomparable capacity. You can't tie him into any kind of player or who came before him. He's totally defined himself. He had no father figure coming up. So how he figured it out without saying he played for Wooden or he played for Dean Smith. No, that's not his story. He came straight out of high school. He was hyped up at 16, and he has not let the hype down. That is a rarity. He's built from a different type of shit, and it's the right stuff. And so the point is, I said, not a fanboy, but as an observer and from his representative thing, you know, and how he conducts himself and conducts his business and what he stands on, how he supports his children. I mean, no player has ever, you know, nurtured their children to be at the point where they can actually potentially play with them.
You know what I'm saying?
It's not out there like that. No one, you can name the great player and you name the fact that they, as a father, they brought their children up independently. You know, of course, we've got players whose sons and fathers play for the league, but not to the point where it's literally been monitored to LeBron since they've been little kids. And to bring that forth, you know some things. And then to connect with your peers and the brothers around your way from where you grew up, put them on, break them off. Make sure they can get a piece of that fucking pie, as they say. Come on, man. No one does this.
That's what freaks them out. The fact that he extended himself and opened this village up to include certain aspects that made it seem like, what are we dealing with here? This is my ordinary brother. You know, all of a sudden, you know, we have to deal with the fact that he's a businessman. He's an athlete.
He's an
entrepreneur. He's a father. He's all these things. And on top of everything else, we can't criticize him. We don't want to criticize him because he's making us money. So,
and you can't say he learned that at Kentucky. Oh, he learned that at Kansas. He learned that at none of that.
Exactly.
All right.
See, right now we're dealing with a situation where all the Carolina guys come back home to finish their degrees, quote unquote,
and
all this other stuff. Because like right now they have, I know this week is Eric Montross is doing his
camp,
and over here they're pitching in with that, and you're getting that whole Carolina thing. But at the same time, though, real love for him comes from the fact that he started learning when he noticed what he didn't know. And then he has never stopped learning what he didn't know. And then whatever else he finds out that he doesn't know, he goes out and learn it. And he has surrounded himself. I was being facetious before, but I don't believe the man has ever farted in public. Because that would be all they had to say about him. You don't hear anywhere near the crazy stuff.
Uh-huh.
And the mistakes he's made have been so minor. And
in his representation, right, he was the chosen one, right? You know, 16 years old, cover SI, NBA player is going to go see him play as a high school sophomore. And has he achieved? He's the NBA's all-time leading scorer, ladies and gentlemen. He's number one, period. All right? He's at the top. He's at the apex. Okay, and now, so if you want to measure that there, you know, with all the guys who are before him that you want to do character assessments on, LeBron's really, he's at the top of that, at the top, yo. And so with all that being said, you know, to your point, when you can maintain that from 16 up, what's he, 38, what now, whatever it may be. So
yeah,
he's been 22 years at the peak and has lived up to it and has measured it and balanced it as best he can. But you know and I know, we break it down to our own lifestyles, right, and our own experiences coming up. We know we had some guys around us, you know, in our community that was super sharp, correct? That had the skill set.
Mm-hmm.
All they needed was a platform. Would I be correct in saying that based on your own direct experience, right? There are some dudes
yes.
that you know, if you put them in the right, you know, they were going to put something together. So he did that with Rich Paul. Rich Paul is the top agent in the National Basketball Association. Rich Paul is not there without LeBron James.
You got
LeBron
that, right?
James put him on. You see, so where he's independent and he can do his own representation, he's not, you know, married at the hip. We've known guys who are hanger-on, you know, who got in Ali's shadow and just rode him all the way out, these entourages. These
yeah.
guys are not entourages. Maverick is another one. They're all putting in work in their own capacity. So he understood in his circle, he was around a lot of talented dudes that if LeBron wasn't who he was, we wouldn't know them. And that's a fact.
True.
They would not be
yep.
on anywhere. But when you can do that, but how many people really do that without the hater aid, right? They just don't do it. Guy comes up, he's got the skill set, he can know him. We don't launch him. You know, the hater aid, oh, holding back, shit, I should have had this opportunity. Hell, if I let him have his opportunity. LeBron didn't function that way. You know what I'm saying? So that in itself
yep.
is a character trait that is not typical.
You got to also consider the fact that before LeBron, the whole idea of the negative press, when I mean the negative press, the aspect of writing to tear down as opposed to build up really wasn't in effect. He created that because that's too much for one brother to have. He came out and they were like, well, wait a minute. We can't deal with this. Hold up. And that's when assholes like Skip Bayless would call him Prince James and criticize him when he passed for somebody to take the winning shot rather than take the shot himself. You know, aspect of journalism where the writer turned into that with a bully pulpit to assault by writing what this guy can't do. And nobody ever considered what the writer couldn't do because LeBron came out with something that was totally different. Somebody that was ready for
it's the King Alfred program, right? You know, from book, the King Alfred program was something that goes back to the J. Edgar Hoover era with COINTELPRO,
yes.
right?
Thank you.
You know, and that and that King Alpha program, as it was defined, was anyone who appeared to be any kind of messiah, you know, that could raise people up, be it a Megar Evers, be it a Fred Hampton, be it a Malcolm, you know, El Hajj Malik Shabazz, being a Martin Luther King. It was, had nothing to do with your background or your religious beliefs. If you had anything that could rally the crowd, a Huey P. Newton, you know what I'm saying? None of these brothers died ingloriously. They were targeted, you know, all under the King Alpha program headed by Lawrence, you know, Lyndon Baines Johnson, where most of these people I've named, as well as the Kennedy brothers as well, they have one thing all in concert. Lyndon Baines Johnson was in the mix with his AKA boy, J. Edgar Hoover. There's enough information and documentation to prove that. And the number one program about that was not to let a black man die great. That's the whole
yep.
comparison. Martin Luther King can be called a plagiarist today or a philanderer or some womanizer, right? And forget all the other works and sacrifices
exactly.
and heart and shit. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's the thing. So they keep these in place. So these brothers fall under the same protocol. You know what I mean? That you can't die great. You know, you have to have a glitch. You have to have something that's not correct.
But,
and LeBron has invaded more of that than anybody,
yeah.
you know, per se.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ali, you know, again, when he was stripped, who was president of the United States, that same person. You know what I mean? So the thing being is it was a very prominent, well-known, conscientious effort to undefine and defame, and they have multiple ways of doing so. And the first way of doing it is to know your style, your likes, your dislikes. You know, are you a womanizer? Or does he like to drink and shit? You know, what does he do? Who's his friend? Who can we attach him with? What kind of snitches? All of that shit. You know what I mean? So these people were forced and contrived to do so. So the remnants of that, for a guy like James to come up, they're still following. It didn't work. He still achieved the highest levels of his career from the age of 16 up. That's been defeated. So as far as what they talk about, it's just bullshit. They will always do that because they're following that program. But what are they standing on? They're dealing with times are up. They're not really having much leverage. They're not merely having much challenge. The shift is in effect as we speak. You know what I mean? So we don't need to worry about that. So people who get caught up, you know, on those things, even the Pikmin toys. Well, shit, Jordan sold more than anyone. The last time I checked, he wasn't a light-skinned brother. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is, you know, James is very brown, so that doesn't matter no more. So you got to get past the Pikmin toy. The Willie Lynch letter was bullshit. You know, Dick Gregory pointed that out. That was some self-created bullshit. A professor brother just created that letter. So anyone using that, get informed. That's not a real letter. That's bullshit. So all these things do not work no longer in today's world, right? LeBron James is a billionaire. So if someone's going to say that, oh, did LeBron succeed or fail behind some bullshit person making 1/50th of his income, which is all target for him to be successful, to some little bullshit studio, talk about LeBron when he's sitting on the billion? Please. That argument's dead. The brother made it and made it beyond anyone's comprehension and magnitude, regardless of the little small talk words. So it doesn't even matter right now because the proof is what he's done and what he's been able to put forward. He just bought his son a $20 million house and graduated from high school. If that ain't the ultimate fuck you to white America, then nothing else is.
No shit. That is the ultimate fuck you. And they can't handle that. And that's exactly why successor path was elevated to the level that it was by the NBA.
God bless the brother and everyone else represented, man. We've defeated that bullshit. So now how we respond, right? How we handle that stuff, you know, is the key factor, you know, all those things like that, because we know it's not more about the money. It's still about the character. It's still about the content.
Right.
It's still about happily ever after. It's not associated with any of these things. Best thing children's books ever used to do that got everyone to reading, if they ever read a children's book, the end of the story always says, happily ever after.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? That's the level. It ain't about none of that other shit. You know what I mean? And so the thing is, if you got that in place and brothers can come right here, man, you did it. You beat the shit. You beat the stress. You beat the high blood pressure. You beat all that shit set up for you to be destroyed. LeBron put $1 million into his body of investment. If that ain't trusting yourself, that's it. When you do something like that, you trigger defense forces and mechanisms around you to protect you at a level you don't understand, because the body's a temple. And if you invested in this temple, automatically in that kind of mindset of dedication, you create a force and a network of protection and force and success that's there. Schwarzenegger proved that from that. Even though he was juicing and all that other bullshit, just with the strength of being a bodybuilder, he ended up becoming a governor. It's not an accident. People don't understand that. So when we had these coaches, black HBCU, you know, Coach McGlinden type, they were beyond what people could even possibly fucking imagine what they were really doing. Even Wooden had that down. He was teaching how to go inside the temple. They missed that. They don't even understand this component. So we need to, well, educate them to that. And that's where they were able to supersede these things. That's why the Tiger Bell could go worldwide and outrun any fucking body, because their temples were built. They had a coach called Temple. I mean, it's just a lot of stuff that we can just surface view on, but they were building inside out, not outside in.
There was something that was put together that was beyond the reasoning and the logic of what everyone else in the real world was doing. If Alvin Ailey was a basketball player, he would be talking about being the boss.
Excellent.
It all tied in.
Go with it, Mike.
Patrick Wise in the house, Patrick in the air.
Live and let me tell myself, fellas.
What it do?
So we just chopping it up, and we are at the point where we are about to say You know, the NBA has been fantastic because of the fact that LeBron James has been the cash cow for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And Gary, we knew that Ja Morant was going to be Jar Jar Binks because he had to have AM or home training. But now it's a whole new story. He has a chance to recover. I think he will.
I don't know because John needs guidance. What I mean is this. He needs a brother on the team, a brother in the house, a brother wherever he goes. Because they're going to be watching him now. They're going to be watching him for me right now.
Well, that sounds like it's more about his entourage, about who his people are, who are around him. He needs the people around him. And you can't buy them. They either got to be there from Jump Street or someone who's passed you across along the way who is simpatico with your long-term goals.
But Michael, I don't understand about it. This guy... He went to college for a year, right?
Yes.
I'm thinking, if you go to college for a year, you know better. You know better.
That's
so,
you.
Hey, why are you doing this?
But that's you. It's a big difference from us from somebody else who maybe needs 2-3 years or the full 4-year experience because mature-wise, they got wrapped too tight, and they need a little bit more. They need more real-world experience. They need more exposure to things that are not akin to their environment, especially if their environment was a negative one. Patrick,
yep.
You can relate to this, I think. You know, tell them, what do you think the NBA is looking for?
From Ja Morant or just in general?
I'm talking about in general.
In general, they want to keep that 17% growth they made this year. They want to
yep.
keep that.
There you go.
They want to keep that the highest ratings they had in 7 years for the finals. That's what they want to keep.
Exactly. You know, without major market squads. What we were
there you go.
Earlier.
There
you know
you
what
go,
I'm saying?
Man.
I mean, you know, it's that's when we talk about the LeBron impact. They've already shifted. He's a talk about player. He's got the scoring record. To be factual, it's a non-factor league-wise, right? We watched the guy break the record. So as far as that, Lakers are not on the front diet.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You know, just like the Knicks, right? Those markets, you know, compare.
Oh,
so, right, you got a Denver-Miami final, and you've got, like you said, you know, good ratings, this, that, and the other because of the global
mm-hmm.
game and everything that's taking place. They've already shifted. Now with the Wembanyama factor, coming
yep.
into the league, you know, that's a big buzz factor. There it is, another cha-ching. That's another
yep.
global market boost as well as stateside boost as
mm-hmm.
well, right? And so the thing being with Ja, Nike stayed with them. They didn't diss him, you know what I'm saying? They stayed with him because, quote-unquote, they like the edginess that attracts
yeah.
that suspension thing. That makes a certain sector, unfortunately, of society even more behind Ja. Now, he could have made some bad decisions, you know, with the hip-hop life. You know, right now in their world, people don't understand their attraction and their socialization with that one dynamic many people miss is the social media dynamic, right, and how impactful
yes.
that is, right? That's a total different beast within itself. And so when they can look at the cachet, they can look at the followers someone has, right, Instagram, all that kind of shit like that, and then how these
mm-hmm.
stories create buzz. They track all that, right, Patrick? So they know if
yeah.
Ja, what's yeah. trending, right? Oh, Ja had a, you know, water pistol in a video and shit. And then all of a sudden, look at what's trending. They go, oh, shit, he's hot. That's why it's only 25 friggin' games. That's 25 games is minimal.
Yeah, I agree. The numbers of games are minimal, but the totality with the added problems that he's had. Initially, I said it's between 400 and it's close to 600 million now, because when you add that to his contract of what he can't get because
he
can't
takes
play.
A hit.
That's a lot of money.
But you know what? So he takes the financial hit, but still, you know, with the money. I mean, the thing about an NBA contract and why these celebrities attach to them and shit and all this stuff, you cannot match an NBA contract in terms of the payout by doing your one or two movies a year, right?
Yeah.
So they're always. I mean, so Ja, you know, like I said, you know, from a financial standpoint, his contract wasn't reduced. He'll take the hit. But he still got the loot, and Nike's still with him, so he's still getting broken off that check. You know, and it's kind of interesting, right? Kyrie allegedly makes some statements, correct? And Nike kicked him to the curb. You know, Kanye, billionaire, they kicked Kanye to the curb. Dude tells the pistol and firearm, well, fuck, it's always been violence in the hood. Give him 25 games. This is the reasoning of these motherfuckers, man. That doesn't make sense. So I'm not on the bash of Ja Morant crowd, because when you deal with young people coming up in the age and what they're exposed to from the prep level, you can grandfather yourself out with judgments about, oh, why is he doing that? What's he doing? The real piece of shit is the one who filmed the video and posted it.
Well, that's
so
big. That's when it's bored.
There you go.
That's the fucking COINTELPRO MF-er.
Yeah.
Right?
That's the
problem. To keep it 100. SOB.
Yes. It's like I told Mike, you know, the thing that I've repeated several times over the years with you guys. It's the moniker. My dad told me, you know, God bless his soul in heaven. He said, boy, you are the company that you keep. If you hang with knuckleheads, knots will soon be on your head. Not the one I'm
going to after your own shit, right?
You
got a dude filming you. And it happens, like, you know, you look at these brothers, you know, unfortunately, in the hip-hop world, like, a dude like Nipsey Hussle in Southern California, you know, he gets whacked in front of his own shop by someone his own set. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff behind that, this, that, and the other. But the point being is, when you're a doer and you're in that makeshift person, it's easy to get these guys, you know, a bag of popcorn and shit and a bottle of Hennessy for them to film some dumb shit on your ass that you find yourself doing. So Morant, like I said, you know, I mean, we can beat that down into the ground and shit. It may not have been the best decision, but that world in which you live, a lot of good decisions are not made. I see the brother recovering. I'm going to stay optimistic there level. Yeah.
This is the thing about Ja Morant. Ja Morant knew what he was doing. I'm saying he knew what he was
doing. That's the second one.
So you pay the price, right?
And that's why I have a problem with this.
Patrick, if all of us would be 100 and knowing what we've known, being around pro athletes and shit, as many years I've had from a personal standpoint, that's nothing compared to what really goes down, right?
Oh,
there's just no one filming this shit.
Wait.
Am I right, Patrick? There's no one filming this shit. There's cats that people are sitting here, you know, waxing poetic of how wonderful they are, and I'll be like, woof, you just okay. I'm gonna let you hold that opinion, because shit be popping off on the regular if we keep that 100 now.
You
know
what I'm saying? LeBron James, what let people do to him?
I mean, cats. I mean, you know, try hanging out with Dennis Rodman for 20 damn minutes.
Please.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's just things that happen on a regular basis that can debunk things of the human nature thing. Or it's the same thing as growing up, right? We grew up. Our parents didn't know some of the stuff we may have been into for a moment. You know what I'm saying? So the difference nowadays, you got this supercomputer in your pocket called a cell phone.
Yep.
You can live stream shit in a micro millisecond. So we used to talk about police brutality, cops fucking with us, and all the other shit. Now, damn, they were never lying, because there's footage everywhere. You know? And so the thing is, nowadays, is that we got this situation where the dude's riding shotgun with his boys, got something on his person, He just got some trouble with some other hidden video shit. He doesn't have the comprehension of knowing these things. Maybe he's not fully cognizant because he's imbibing on certain medicinals, maybe, right? Now they got shit called medicinal. You know what I mean? You can get a prescription to blow weed and shit and may not be in your best. And next thing you know, you're on what they used to call candid camera. You know, it's a fucking setup.
I was talking to somebody you know today, real world, and my boy, Raph Addison today.
Yeah, Raph. What up, Raph?
Me and Raph are talking today at the bank, you know?
Right.
And Raph, we were talking about certain things. One of the things he talked about, one day we need to have a discussion this on this, just on the sidekick. Mike,
right.
We need to talk about pickup basketball.
Oh, my goodness.
And what it did to change. But that's another story. But anyway, Ralph and I were talking about it.
Are you talking about the back-of-the-day pickup?
Yes. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
What,
a whole nother level.
What it did and what it doesn't do today. But that's a whole other story.
That's a great conversation.
Ralph was saying, and we were talking about some stuff, but he said, but there's certain things, because Ralph was in the league, and I was in the front office, and Ralph was with the Nets.
Right, he
made it very plain. There's some things, you know, his boys are close to him. They're still close to him today.
Correct.
But there's some things Rap said, and I know, hey, fellas, I ain't going there. When we go in the city, I'm not going
correct.
There.
Correct.
You see,
correct.
I ain't doing that. He said,
correct.
He had to control the crowd. This kid didn't know how to do that.
And
what
he
was his dad
that.
Was involved. That was the biggest problem.
Yeah, because you know, the thing is, they chased the bag.
Yeah.
See, so you're talking about, now I know what you're talking about, because I can recall, like, if you went to Orange Park, right? Orange Park on a Sunday, New Jersey, right?
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Go to the hoop, right? I mean, you can roll, right? You know what I'm
talking
about. Yeah, talking
about that.
Went there, right?
Exactly.
You can roll up to motherfucking Orange Park. Next thing you know, and shit, I'm guarding Sugar Ray Richardson. You know what I'm saying? Sugar Ray Williams and shit, they out there holding it down and shit. They getting broken off with the Knicks and, you know, and there's other. It's almost fantasy when you look back at it nowadays, how it was just a natural environment. But it was the love of the game, right? We talk about the Eastern League when you push back further. Right. Them brothers played in middle school.
The
Sudbury Jaguars or some shit versus the Pacers. I can't remember these names. They played in middle school. They had full coverage, full newspaper coverage, right? They had a fan base. They had programs. Google that shit. Eastern League programs, whatever. That thing was heavy. That's a beautiful book. Written on the Eastern League, you know, and I went to one box store one day where my father was playing. I'm seeing helicopter knowings, right? Street fame, Heaven's Playground, helicopter? Boeheim, Syracuse's coaches, Paul Arison, a bunch of other cats, right? You know, Chaney, Ray Scott, and they're all playing each other. And I'm asking my dad, yo, you ball with helicopter? You know, to me, he's some legend in a book who was an actual player, right? But that's what it was like, man. The whole roots of the NBA, and this is interesting, New York basketball and the NBA, a lot of people that still work with the Knicks, like on the PA system or announcers or some other shit, they come from the Rucker. They incorporate the Rucker League at the NBA level. The NBA knew, and they all know how to integrate all our great stuff, like the summer leagues now, it's the Vegas Summer League, which is NBA Summer League on steroids, right? And the way they market that shit is the Knicks will be playing the Lakers. Not one player on each team, unless they were first-round draft picks, are going to make those rosters. But when fans come to Vegas and they go NBA Summer League, and Vegas attracts a global tourism boost, right? People pay them tickets, swearing they're going to see the Nets and shit play the Celtics, and they're looking for Tatum and Kyrie, and those motherfuckers are sitting in the stands eating popcorn while a bunch of free agents are trying to make the team, but they use those names to market. and they blow that thing down. But that was rooted with the Sunny Hill Summer League. The Rutgers Summer League created this
Sunny
whole dance, and now the Vegas Summer League.
Somebody needs to do a documentary on Sunny Hill. I've been saying it for years. He's a name that tell you, I hate to see, you know, Sunny ain't he ain't 21 no more.
No,
somebody
needs to do
a Sunny Hill.
Sunny was one of the first. But see how they integrate again, right? Remember, Sunny used to be a color commentator for NBA with Musburger,
CBS.
I believe, right?
Yeah, so Britt Musburger bumped them off.
But see, they're always incorporating, like you're talking about with rap. So what we do as a socialization, like hip-hop was that way right back when I was coming up, you know. Guys would have a block party, two turntables, a speaker plugged into a lamppost in the park.
Yeah.
And you'd gather, and they called it a block party. Now what, this is a global empire called hip-hop, but it all started in its most simplistic form as a natural art form of what we do. Same thing with the hoop that you're talking about, right? And the NBA incorporates all those factors into its bliss. I mean, Dr. J still got all kinds of footage and highlights of him banging out dumps at the Rucker.
Look at Facebook, there's a whole bunch of pictures that I never saw before coming out now on Facebook.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, my God.
I don't know where they got
them
from.
That was a socialization thing. You just got hyped just to go up there. And then, you know, haven't had a chance to play up there. And there was this one thing in New York called the King Tower Summer League where the King Tower projects are uptown. There's a court right there. Now in the YouTube era, you got white cats going to the King Tower courts and shit. Oh, this is the King Tower courts. This is a world-renowned park and shit. You know what I'm saying? I watched this white dude from Maryland go to King Tower and challenge the brothers around the way to see who could dunk on them and shit, where now you could do that as a YouTuber. So now these people are getting to these sets and scenes that were like some of the battlegrounds coming up as a youth.
That's because they understood. They understood the aspect of it all. Billy Cunningham knew he came to Rucker Place to understand that, I can play. They need to know I can play. And they were not able to play. Chris Mullin understood that. Well,
Chris Mullin, yes, he did.
Bird did that, Bird, you know what I'm saying? When he was going to come up, he'd take three buses to go play with the brothers, and he's literally quoted saying it's a black man's game. But see, all eras, even, I mean, I see something interesting that just really, now cats like this can realize there's this thing, and I ran across an accident. I seen it on YouTube. They got these flag football leagues in Jersey, like the A7 FL League or some shit.
Yep, yep.
Right? I mean,
yep.
We grew up playing like 12-on-12 tackle football in the block.
Right? Concrete, on the streets.
Right? And now they got these leagues. It's all organized and shit. The Muckrakers versus a Trenton somebodies or whatever. And I'm looking at shit, and they got fields, they got footage, they got announcers. It's kind of fly, but that stuff's been around forever.
The Texas group has actually has a TV contract.
Yeah.
My nephew stays in it.
Yeah, I love it.
And he's over 50 years old, but they be out there knocking heads.
I love it. But you know what? That's how we came up, though. Right?
Which is part
That's
of the problem.
How we came up. And see, this is where a lot
of
guys
it's
we knew. You know, we knew when, you know, okay, if you were in Alabama, you knew Bo Jackson was coming up, right? As a youth, right? You knew Deion was coming out of Florida, right? If you've seen him as a youth. You know what I mean? It's just cats that you know are going to come up. Carl Lewis and these dudes, even from the track standpoint, right? Like Carl Lewis, Dennis Mitchell, they're all South Jersey dudes, right? You know what I mean? Carl went to, you know, I mean, Carl, of course, you know, he went to the Olympics and just ripped shit in half. His sister, Carol, was pretty nice.
Carol
you know
was
what
good.
I'm saying? Yes, she was. And then Joetta Clark, baseball Joe's daughter.
Yes,
the
whole family.
Yeah, yeah. But what I'm saying is, when we are coming up, You know what I mean? And other areas can you can back this as well. This was like what how we came up. So our measurements were like we were having Olympians and shit, you know, going to the local Burger King or shit back in the day, right? Because we was all going. So my point being is as they trespass to the different levels, we don't name drop. This is just what the environment was.
Thank which goes to the point, which I said, I'm not going to talk about today. We come back another time and talk about it. Which the point was, Raph and I were talking about.
Right.
We were talking about some local ball players. I was talking to him about that. I didn't know that he knew. He said, yeah, I know about him because he's going to the practices. He said, but he said, they're rough around the edges, but they got a scholarship. He said, Pat, he told me, real quickly, he told me that he went. There's a place up in New York. Wasn't on that spot. Another place in New York. He took some cats from Jersey City, and Newark to some place up in New York where guys were all scholarship players. He took about 8 guys in Jersey. They rode up to some place in New York and played these college guys and beat the brakes off them. And they thought the brothers were scholarship players.
I mean, shredded them. And, you know, I've seen that even when cats was like, I remember, you know, even when cats was whatever the sport, right, it was just universal. Like when Ironhead Hayward was ripping shit, son, right? His son played for the Steelers, correct?
He got two sons, one played for the Detroit Lions, too, tight end.
Okay, yeah. So these brothers was like, you know, when you coming up, you're interspersing, you know, it would be like my man Kerry Scurry, right? His younger brother Moses played at UNLV. Kerry played at LIU, right?
Yeah.
And he played a few years with me. When Malone was a rookie with Utah, and they were roommates, right? You know, different stories there. You know, when Carl was there on the come up. Mike Brown's from around your way. Me and Mike is real tight. But the point being is all these different parameters and different things all link and then merge and meld into this whole global, national kind of a scene shit, right? You know, but the thing was, it's like this is what the unification was. It got broken up with the crack game, right? It got broken up with the drug scene.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Bob Hurley gets all this fucking hype shit out of your area in town, but he built off that whole vibe because that MF was a probation officer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wait, he didn't retire. Wait, tell you. He didn't retire until... He hasn't been retired like 4 years. He was still probation officer. Yes.
Correct.
His son Danny,
Danny took UConn to the finals, right? They won it all, correct?
Yep.
And so, but Danny was imbued in that whole Jersey City shit we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and because you know,
And Shaheem, right? Shaheem's at Seton Hall.
Shaheem. But the thing with Danny, I got him credit.
He can coach.
There's no doubt about that. He made a metamorphosis because I told you before that he thought that he made the craziest statement. Said, well, when we go to pros, everybody was saying we go to pros. You gonna watch the games? As if he
yeah, literally. Yeah, I mean,
and,
yeah.
And it messed his head up when he got to the NCAA and guys start busting him. And then Bobby took off. He couldn't match Bobby at all, and it messed his head up. So he got himself together, and now, you know, he's coaching. He's done, you know, done great. Matter of fact,
and back to that national building, there was a time when Krzyzewski was at Army.
Yep.
Carlesimo was at Wagner. Valvano was at Iona.
Patino,
right?
That was a long time ago. Yeah.
Right? But all Patino three of them went, you know, won national championship. Well, PJ got Seton Hall there. But they got into that level, but they all came out of that core corridor, raised up all that talent the brothers was pushing out.
Mm-hmm. And guess what? Eric, that's a good point. You know why? Watch Patino in St. John's.
Yeah, he's
doing some stuff.
He's blowing it up out there.
He got money behind him. That
NIL. I mean, what did they? I mean, did Wall Street break give him a blank check NIL because he's recruiting his ass off?
That brother coached that team best he could, and they got rid of him. And as soon as he got rid of – that was the push. What can we do to get St. John's back in the map? Well, let's copy the model what USC did. Put some money behind it and make it work.
All that to say, it's like all these things peel out and go global, national, this, that, and the other, but it's all built in those core corridors of what we do in our communities at a baseline that's always being watched, viewed, studied, and searched.
And you know something else? It bothers me a little bit, and I'm running St. John's Club a little bit, not much I used to be. They dogged Deion for leaving and getting everybody, but McKinley did the same thing, and nobody said nothing. He got rid of the whole squad. He got rid of the whole squad.
Again? I'm sorry, missed the name. You said something was the same thing?
When Deion got left with the Colorado and got rid of everybody, everybody was talking about they got about eight guys left, whatever. But Tino's in the same thing with the St. John's.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody, he walked into the gym and said, some of your minds are getting stuff go now because I'm getting rid of the whole thing. And
I hope it works out for Deion, man, because he definitely needed those Colorado health benefits a lot more than Jackson State could cover him for. That Colorado health benefit plan, he's going to need some support there.
Yes, love.
It looks
God
like,
he needs
you know.
Help.
Yeah, yeah. To me, from what I knew, there was some health challenge. The brother's got some health challenges. And, he had to make a move income-wise, and also, the NFL doesn't have a comprehensive health plan that he kind of needs.
Yeah, well, but the point is, he said that card of coaches around and developed Patino and Calif, and I never thought Calisman was a great coach in the first place. But that's another story, because his daddy got him that job. That's another story.
That whole thing, Massimino, Calissimo, Patino,
and me both will forget it too. Come on, man.
hey, Carnestasca, he's the godfather.
Yeah.
Carl Louis.
Yeah. Louis still alive. but here's the trick. The brother couldn't get no job. Come on. We could play, but we couldn't get no job.
Yeah, he's suing his ass off and shit, for trying to get broken off. That was going to be a tough gig because we found it with Charlie Strong, right? Remember Charlie Strong went to Texas? Boy, that was going to not work out.
Yeah.
I've never seen a coach literally get sabotaged in broad day every day like he was getting at Texas.
They imploded that program. They imploded
that getting fired.
I got to get back that. Tyrone Whittingham, I know the name. I saw that. I saw when he came in to Jersey.
Ooh. Charlie Strong, man. I mean, my goodness. I mean, the boosters were saying he's a great coordinator before the first kickoff.
Man, please.
I couldn't stand Notre Dame. I remember when Tubby Smith won the title at Kentucky. It was like, okay, we've seen this before. Notre Dame, I remember in the 60s when they booed their own players on court for having too many black players on the court at the same time.
That's true. That's true.
I mean,
that's true.
I know Bob Whitmore and Austin Carr was a rookie on that team. And
Austin
it was Carr. What they had done. Sid Catlett, all these cats.
Sid Catlett, yo, there
knew,
it is.
They knew what they were dealing with.
Man, Adrian Bentley? Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I forgot what's the other brother from Jersey? God, what's his name? Oh, God.
Brokaw and Shoemake.
Yeah, Shoemake, yeah.
Gary
Brokaw,
John Shoemake, both out of Amboy.
Yeah.
Then the Taylor brothers came out of Amboy just as a curiosity. Bruce Taylor, San Francisco 49ers, and his brother Brian that played with the Nets. Brothers. I mean, and you know what, coming up, right? We've seen these motherfuckers on the block, we've seen these good brothers on the blacktop, right? Through a wired fence, hooping it up. Accessible, setting solid examples, not looking for no hype. It was the love of the game claw.
A question I'm going to ask, guys, just throw it up. with the crafting of image of players at the top levels of the NBA now shifting, as opposed to in leagues 20 years ago where they spotted the farm players now. I'm interested to see what happens tomorrow in this draft. How many farm players get taken?
In the first round. Well, Wembanyama, we know, is one.
Well, that's a gift.
Then it's going to be an American thing. But you're seeing where each year, man, they've got agreements, especially in that second round, right? In that second round, they really draft players that may not even come over 3 years later.
That's a great question, but I'm more conscious of the words that are used. If you remember that old game show Password, where two people would talk and one passing one word off the other. I wish I had a dollar for every time I heard the word transcendent.
Yes.
I have a feeling you hear it a few times, and there'll be cha-ching in the background every time that word is uttered, because they're talking about revenue streams, and they don't care about nothing else, but.
And Mike, something else will happen today too. Very interesting. The conversation concerning Jay Williams talking about Kyrie and Dallas, and Jay wasn't for the best. You know, they want to protect Luka, but Jay Williams said protect him. If he got Kyrie, they need to get somebody to get the ball out of Luka's hands. And the discussions about getting out of his hand were driving white boys crazy. Because Jimmy said, he said, if you do it five times and wait till the 20 seconds to pass the ball, you ain't winning. But also, how is that going to lead to other farm players coming, copying that to get the success that he has? Interesting dynamic, based upon what I said.
The rule of thumb is the way that they rubberize it. There was a period of time where if you were an AAU coach, NBA – they had lost contact with, quote-unquote, the block, right? So they used the AAU coach pimp to try to rein them in. So there was a point in time when, I don't mind using his name, brother named Dell Demps. I know him personally real well. Actually coached him in pro assemblies. Dell was the GM for the New Orleans Pelicans for many years, right? Then he made the trade that sent Chris Paul to the Lakers, and this was right after the lockout, and the NBA teams protested Paul. So Kobe would have got three more years on his career because it was going to be a Kobe Chris Paul backcourt. NBA seen that, the other teams, and they bit. So Stern jumped in because they didn't have an owner at the time, right? Because the owner,
that's a trick,
you know, had got clipped, right? So the NBA had literally taken over, and they could not find Fortune 500 companies in New Orleans to buy the Pelicans. That's why Benson of the Saints owns them, because he's the only deep-pocketed dude that's around. They didn't have sponsorships. So they've got that smoothie arena thing. They got the smoothie joint. It's like the only thing around down there that could, like, do some naming rights. But anyway, Dell was there, and he made that trade. They clipped the trade. They rebooted the trade, shut it down, then – they eventually did another trade later, which brought over with Brandon Ingram, got traded over, and they brought AD over, right? Anthony Davis, you know, years later. And but that was the one time Magic pulled that off, but they shut him down. So Pelinka got the trade. Some weird shit that goes on in the NBA all the time. But the point of the matter is, it's like when you start making these personnel decisions and rooting and booting your team, they want certain geographical locations at certain levels of player. So, again, the style of play, the Euros moving in, they hired the AAU coaches. So now they're complaining that no one's learning the game. So Popovich was talking all that shit. I knew he would call me Negro Domus and shit, because I said Wembanyama's going to the Spurs. Popovich is tanking, so he got the deal to get Wembanyama. Peter Holt, owner, the Holt family, owner of the Spurs, good fellas and shit with the NBA right there. Those are their boys. They were key components of the last lockout and shit, playing hardball and all that. And the other guy that was playing hardball back then would shock the NBA players, so they made sure he had the worst winning percentage of an owner ever, Michael Jordan, you know, when he was all anti-player and shit, you know, when they're like, huh, they fucked their players. I'm like, what? You know, and now he's selling out, but did he ever really have a piece of the Hornets?
He got $3 billion, bro. He had something.
Yeah, right.
$275 million, $3 billion, I'll take that.
Well, he needs. I mean. In other words, by the time he finishes paying off his gambling debt, he'll get about 40%. So,
by the time he finishes paying off his gambling debt, he'll have about 27 cents. I saw air a couple weeks ago, and it's unbelievable. Michael orchestrated $400 million. With the transactions when they broke off his contract with Nike, stating that he got X off each shoe. Now, when you make so much money, when you make so much money that they give you a franchise, because let's not get it twisted. Michael didn't buy the Bobcat. They gave him the fucking Bobcats.
Thank you very much.
Because the inverted
there was no buy-in for the damn Hornets.
Thank you.
That was some figurative shit. We'll give you some equity component share, managing general director. We'll float the low. We'll float the lean. They're the worst marketed team. I've known Kenny Williamson, right? He passed.
That's my man.
Yeah, Kenny Williamson, right? Kenny was my man. I sometimes I feel like, shit, man, how long I've been around these guys? You were a high school kid. I met him, right? And so Kenny Williamson was the director of scouting under the Bobcats. Bob Johnson's cats. Bobcats, right?
Yeah.
And I talked to him one day. I said, man, I'm on the West Coast, man. You need me to do some, like, general scouting for you, you know, because I've done some shit like that. And he said, first thing out of his mouth, he said, man, but he literally quoted the man's name. He said, Bob Johnson got us bare bones down here.
Yes,
I walk in the office in the wintertime, and I'm wondering, well, shit, would a heat kick on at some time today?
That was Bob Johnson.
That's just like those damn reruns of Sanford and Son.
Refund Bob Johnson.
You got that here in the house as well.
The reruns of the Sanford and Son. Well, the only thing when I hear that, what you just said, Mike, the only thing he didn't share to me was 7-day-old collard greens and shit like Fred would have done or something.
Oh, hell yeah. 8-day-old collard greens.
Man.
8-day-old collard greens kill Superman. And
Johnson's name was toast in the league, except when it was a little better with the WNBA team in D.C. before she got out of it. But Bob just, it was atrocious.
Yeah, she took her divorce cut and bought the Washington squad. She got a divorce break off.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens with these dudes, like Russell Simmons and the rest of these guys, when they fuck up, they get ghosts.
Yep.
You know, they get ghosts, man. Because, man, Russell, man, I used to see him carrying album crates and shit into sets, you know, back in the Def Jam days, right? You know, on the come-up level, right? And then he got fat farmed up, right? He got to the fat farm up. I mean, he was on Pelosi, and these people had this brother on speed dial. Right? Now, if you knew Russell from, you know, Rush, as he was called back in the day, you know what I mean? And see him on speed dial later, and they'd be talking shit about Ja Morant. I'm just saying.
Yep.
All right.
He just got to be a little smarter.
Gentlemen, you all have to be a little smarter and deal a final thought. Reggie, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Oh, there he is.
What's up, Rich?
I've been out there with Bob Huggins.
Give me another beer.
Bob Huggins.
Cool.
Wow. My
second DUI. I done made a good one. You know, on a serious
Now, did Huggins drop an N-bomb recently? What was Didn't he have some funny which he had to apologize for?
You know, that battle between Kentucky and Cincinnati down that way is deep. And when he talked about the Cincinnati fans were soft and called somebody a faggot, something like that.
He went and joked him Noah on him. He hit him with the F-bomb.
Yeah, man.
Oh, I got it.
Quickly, he had to watch out because he went back down there. Them folks drinking that corn looking down there. Somebody might have went after him, you know. I'll leave it at that.
You know it. On
Go on, Rich,
I'm sorry. Gentlemen, it's kind of sad.
Where the hell is John Mendenhall when you need him?
Yeah.
Really. But on the serious tip, it's kind of sad that when we see a lot of young black males that unfortunately don't have a strong father figure, and these European coaches are always stepping in. There's 30 to 40 former Cincinnati players are going to go to Morgantown to visit Bob Hutchinson to see what they can do to help. I find it very interesting that Ted DeAngelis, who already owns the Wizards, you see what a train wreck that is, and he lucked up and got a Stanley Cup because the team was loaded. Should have had more than one. Now he wants to buy the Washington Nationals. Oh, by the way, the contract for the TV deal that the Orioles had to pay the Nationals, $123 million in a lawsuit because of the media constraint. There's only one problem. Nobody's not streaming no more to watch games on streaming. So these teams are going bankrupt. That's the dirty thing nobody talk about. I'm sure Patrick can elaborate on that down the road.
Yes, indeed,
guys. Just food for thought.
Yeah. Watch out. I want to talk about it now. Watch out for leagues going from regional networks because major regional network companies are having problems keeping lines together. You'll be doing the city locals and streaming. But I'll talk about it later on. It's happened. One just happened today. One just happened today with the Utah Jazz. Now leave it alone.
YouTube TV Sunday NFL Prime.
Yeah, Patrick, you got the ball. I got an email message, a Facebook message from one of my old partners. I saw and happy to see that he's doing well. I'm a big for years. We together and once I mention his name, you'll know Mike in the press box. Well, he was part of a documentary, and I know you guys should know, hear about it soon. It's coming out. The trailer's out right now called The Dream Whisperer. And you know what the Dream Whisperer is?
Yes, Dick Barnett.
Dick Barnett.
Yeah, that's the movie. That was the movie we talked about a while back that's now on NBA TV.
It's out. It's matter of fact, it was on NBA TV twice on Monday.
Yeah, my father's in that. My father's in that series. He's in that episode.
Yeah,
for
real. All right.
Yeah, because he's one of the few living, him and Barnett, some others from that era, and he's in that documentary. He got interviewed for that show. So yeah, check it out. It's now on TV. The Dream Whisperer first appeared in Baldwin Hills in a black theater preview a few years back. You know what I mean? So now NBA TV brought in. But a lot of that discourse, and again, I credit the brothers here because, again, I always like to speak to the impact because there is a lot of impact here. We don't need the New York Times review and shit to talk about it. The impact's real. And we've talked about these factors all the time for many, many years. You know, Fred's, beats the Tom drug. About, telling our own story. So you're not speaking for secondhand intel here. You know, we're speaking from direct experience, direct living things. And then we're not bragging about it, but if it comes up to me like we're bragging, we're fucking unapologetic about that.
There you go.
I know I am. I ain't here to apologize for shit on anything that's ever been done from an accomplishment standpoint. But to your point, and what I love what you said about Patrick, so thank you for bringing that up again, because I did see that. It always blows my mind because it's such a personal thing based on personal experience to me. It's almost like, it's weird for me. It's goosebumpy seeing these brothers. I've seen a lot of my years of life. It's just, I don't know. I can't explain the energy because so much of that is downloaded in my person. But what I love about that, I'm so glad you shared that, is the fact that these brothers weren't doing anything for fanfare. They weren't doing anything for fist bumps and shit. they were just laying down a legacy amongst themselves. And what I love about the fact, too, they're more popular now in 2023 than they ever were alive.
Yeah, and Eric, I'm gonna tell you one quick thing and I'll stop. At the time, I was working on Wall Street at the time, in the early 90s.
Right.
And I'll never get the pushback, and I couldn't understand it, the pushback of Dick Barnett, Dr. Dick Barnett, getting institutional accolades. And there's some folks pushing back on that. I said, why? You're going to push back him? You ain't saying about Bill Bradley when he's got a real scholarship. What are you talking about him? And I remember getting some guys I knew on Wall Street. And it was also a brother can't think. Your brother can't ascend to
When he went to TSU, and they covered this in Black Magic pretty well, and I was watching it with my mother, who just was like, almost, it was like, it was weird, because it was like she was doing the play-by-play on certain things before they even started telling what it was, right? But they were talking about how they used to post grades back then for athletes, or people, the kids could go look at their grades, like publicly. And they were talking about Dick Burning's grades, and they were like saying he had FFF, and my mother kept saying, yep, FFF. And then they said FFF, like right behind after she said it, you know, about that era. And Coach McLendon raised him up to he got to the level of doctorate, because when he went to TSU, the way Black schools, quote unquote, as they called it at the time, were supporting their team, they got people's education game up because they taught them the right way. And they were amongst their peers. So for him to get to doctorate level, write books, thesis, lectures, and be honored that way, when he left Gary, Indiana, and went to Nashville, to the great majority of people, that was going to be a miracle for him to even approach where he's now risen to.
Well said. Fred, come on in.
Well, let me throw this in the pot about Dr. Skull.
I love it.
As Coach Maggie tells me, he says, son, it wasn't that he was illiterate. He read all the time.
Yeah.
The biggest, one of the manager's jobs was to go to his room and pick up books and return them to the library, because he would go get them and read them. And it wasn't that he couldn't learn. He had, as a lot of kids do, who are athletes and who aren't. Sometimes some teachers don't know how to teach certain kids.
True.
And that was a situation for him.
Correct.
And because of that, he was labeled, but the label was false.
Correct.
And it's no surprise that, and if you ever talk to him, you know right up front, this guy got something on the ball, because I was at Coach Mack's funeral, and I actually sat at the table with them, and then where else did I see him? Yeah, it was Coach Mack's funeral, and he was going back and forth with Dr. Leroy Walker, and Dr. Walker was saying, well, this is one of Mack's boys, and you got to treat him right, or something like that, he said, and because my contention was, you know, I knew, and he, you know, they just looked. I just looked at the way that he was handling things, and he was. You could tell he was one of the leaders of the team, even after all these years. Because if you're around teams like that, you notice it, that sort of thing. And like I said, he was labeled erroneously because he did not fit the label of one size fits all when it comes to education.
Mm-hmm.
And Coach Mack had designed special things for him to do, and he did them. So his grades became what they are, and he became what he is now. So, you know, it's just another star in the crown of HBCU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
Well said.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, you want to top that off?
Yeah. I'm going to weigh in on that real quick. I'm going to hold it down too long. Yeah, all that's great. Yeah, the Dream Whisperer, I was aware of that. I remember when they were filming, I got word on how that was going to go down. You know, it's hard to really, I mean, we've talked about it, and the common thread about the interconnectivity of all these great exploits and how they stream into mainstream society in a lot of ways on a very stealth level. There was a, you know, running mate, you know, of coach of Dick Barnett, John Barnhill. You know, he was
John. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. John Barnhill was.
Yeah,
yeah. John Barnhill, the Rabbit. They called him the Rabbit. You know, again, you know, he was 3/5 of that starting team. My father was the center. There's some other cast in the backcourt was Barnhill and Barnett. Coach John Barnhill. So John Barnhill, you know, he, you know, got into the league. He played, you know, for a number of years. He was part of those three straight national championship teams. But what's not commonly known about him, he was an assistant coach with the Los Angeles Lakers when Bill Sharman, you know, was the coach, right? So the year after they won, they still set the record, right, 33 straight wins in a row for a professional team, that Lakers team under Sharman. Now, Sharman replaced Coach McLendon.
Jimmy Clem. Yeah.
Exactly. His first head coaching job was replacing when Coach McLendon moved to the front office. Bill Sharman became the coach of the Cleveland Pipers, right? The first Cleveland NBA team under the National Basketball League. That was his first head coaching job, Sharman. And he coached, you know, Barnett and Barnhill, you know, as a team. So he had that relationship with John Barnhill. So when he became the head coach, it was Casey Jones, amazing, two former Celtics players, right, become the coach of the Lakers to get them 33 straight and to finally get them to break through with that title that one year, which is interesting. So the next year he brought in, you know, Coach Barnhill, and they were, you know, that was his top assistant. Back then they didn't have like 30 assistant coaches, right? But what's not commonly known about Coach Barnhill, and then the following years, Bill Sharman, either his wife or himself, I think it was his wife, had a, you know, a medical issue, so he had to take the season off. So John Barnhill coached Wilt West and that Laker team that whole season as interim coach. So there you have it, a TSU backcourt from those winning years ended up becoming the head coach of one of the marquee teams of the franchise, the Los Angeles Lakers, all from underneath that whole environment. Coaching Wilt, coaching West out of a HBCU, and what they laid down, he rose to the heights where he ended up coaching that franchise of the logo. We know what Wilt stands for in the Lakers. Yes, John Barnhill was the head coach for the great majority of that season when Sharman had to step away.
Wow.
History behind
that's
history.
Awesome piece of info. That's an awesome item. Gary, come on with it.
The University of Memphis went to
the University of
Memphis. I know what you're going to
say. Got it.
Penny Hardaway gets a 3-game suspension for illegal recruiting.
They're still gunning for Penny.
My question is, the NCAA, what are you doing? The NIA right there, and you're going to penalize this guy for recruiting in April and then in a month. What difference does it make? This is a crazy rule. You have to wait 1 month before you graduate. Get out of here. Anyway, Memphis will get over it, and they will another championship this year, I think. So Penny Hardaway, just take it in and go on and do what you do. Peter McCone, 1 o'clock Saturday.
Uh-oh.
Music box, then the 4 o'clock will be Diana Ross.
Uh-oh. And Mike, can I add on to what Gary's saying about Penny Hardaway? You know, his top recruit lives in San Diego, and he just got busted on some kind of
charge. Oh, yeah, the young kid, yeah.
Yeah.
He's already living in a mansion because of NIL money.
Yeah. So, you know, so you know they can track Penny, but they can't. Don't get me started.
I thought you were going to say that it was going to be Otis Redding versus Eddie LaVert or something.
that's a good idea.
Eddie, all right. Eddie, tied.
Brothers, there is a nasty trend that's happening. Before the show started, I was searching, and I was on YouTube, and I heard these four or five damning items about Patrick Mahomes, more than his brother. Now, his brother's an asshole because he knows what he's doing. He's just stupid. And he knows that he's a star's brother because he's acting entitled. He also knows that he gets away with it so much. Now, Patrick signed a $450 million contract, 10 years with the Chiefs. It will go down as one of the biggest bargains ever because the contract right now, Mahomes is only like the 56th highest paid quarterback in the league, and he's got two chips to finish. Now, that's it. Family, well, there's nothing you can do about family except I'm going to let them go. And just like the NFL has their indoctrination period where they say look out for Ray Ray and them, you got to look out for your own blood sometimes too, because I don't think there's nothing in what Jackson Mahomes does that flatters Patrick Mahomes. I don't get the vibe that there's anything that even smacks of protecting his brother because he's acting like an asshole. He's not a teenager. He's a grown-up. And even though he's a young grown-up, he should have home training built in. If nothing else, he should have been able to at least afford to buy home training. His father was a pro, and they've been around a bit. And they understand what the real deal is when it comes to presenting yourself. Patrick.
Mike, let me know what you just said. Same applies to him and John Morant. It's the people who, they can't get their Patrick, but they get his brother to get on him. Who came up his brother to make sure that they don't get to him?
Exactly. And
Sounds like an episode of Fredo Corleone.
It does.
100%.
Your entourage of people can be everything or they can be nothing. And there's nothing that I can see that has Jackson Mahomes having any value to his brother other than blood. But, you know, blood kills real easily. We'll see you next week. Everybody take care.
All right, over the weekend I watched When They See Us, Ava DuVernay's four-part series on Netflix. It was both the most beautiful and sad thing I've ever seen. It is the story of five young boys, 14 to 16 years old, who are accused of rape and assault of a white jogger based on little to no evidence at all. There was no physical evidence that connected those boys to the scene. There was no eyewitness evidence that connected them to the scene. They happened to be what all black and brown parents fear, the wrong place at the wrong time. And their lives were turned upside down. Complicit was a legal system and powerful people that decided these boys should be the example. And all of those people who were involved, from the district attorney to the prosecutor to even a businessman in New York, have all gone on, even despite these boys' trials and travails, have gone on to great success. Donald Trump became president. The district attorney, the prosecutor, became a best-selling author. Somebody else became a teacher at Columbia. There is nothing that you could accuse black people of that people will not believe. Nothing. Even absent evidence, not one shred of physical evidence placed those boys in the scene, a scene that bloody and that brutal with no evidence, nothing saying that they were there. Later on, the man who came forward, whose evidence was DNA was everywhere, he came forward and they still couldn't say that those boys hadn't done it. I was reading CNN and they talked that they had an exhaustive list of all of the men. They talked about, did an exhaustive study, and it talked about how black people are more likely to be falsely accused and adjudicated than any other race. And that is because when they see us, they see monsters. I asked Jay, who works on our show, to put together a list. He had 5 minutes to do it. He was able to come up with 92 names. Now, I can't read them all because we have commercials to run. But some of the ones that pop out are Ed Johnson, 1906 rape, Thomas and Meeks Griffin, 1913 murder, the Scottsboro Boys in 1931, Ed Brown, 1934 murder, Arthur Ellington, 1934 murder, Henry Shields, 1934 murder, George Stinney, 1944 murder, Lena Baker, 1945 murder, Reuben Carter, 1966 murder, Dewey Bozella, 1977 murder, Clarence Brantley, 1980 murder, Grover Thompson, 1981 stabbing, Troy Davis, 2011 murder. And these happens in all regions across the country. Now, these are people who somebody put at a scene and put to jail based on little or no evidence, because all you have to do is say a black person did something and people will be inclined to do it. The only thing they don't believe is that we went to school and that we work hard and that we're honest and that we love our families. You can't believe that. But any horrible thing you accuse black people of, you can get away with it, and they'll do it. Those boys lost their lives because they became what that system decided they should be, monsters, and they weren't. They were children. You send a 16-year-old boy to Riker, to Attica, in a maximum security prison. You ruined their life. And you know what you did? You gave them $41 million. Do you know that Erin Andrews, a white woman, somebody saw her through a peephole, and she got $50 million? So breaking five black lives doesn't mean anything. Seeing a naked white woman, everything. And every one of those people who prosecute the prosecutor, Donald Trump and the district attorney, all those people all profited from it. They sold books. They became president. They became teachers at Columbia. I don't think it's enough just to ask that we boycott that woman's books. I think she should be indicted. I think she should go to jail. I think she should suffer the same thing that they suffered. You saw those children. You didn't see children. You saw monsters, and you made them that. And you contorted them to do it. And you did it in spite of all the evidence saying, no, here's the thing I don't understand. Science says we did do it. Science says we didn't. You can say whatever you want about us, and people will believe it. Right now, Donald Trump is the president of the United States of America because he said he wasn't born here, and people believed it absent evidence. They believe the worst about us. I said this before, and I mean it to be true. The most dangerous place for us to live is in white people's imagination. The movie is called When They See Us. I suggest that you all see it. And when they do see us, what a lovely day it'll be. Because they will finally get to see that we're no more, no less human, no less loving, no less fearful, no less flawed than anybody else. It'll be a great day in America when they do finally see us. All right, that's a little note from the GED section.
You know, there's one little item I got to add to that. When that shit hit with the Central Park jogger, I know distinctively from accounts in the Daily News when they said they interrogated the kid illegally, and the kid said that he raised her skirt. They knew he was lying. They coerced him into something. Joggers don't wear skirts. And Pete Hamill and Jimmy Breslin and all these guys who supposedly love New York and wrote about New York so eloquently, they didn't put them in check about it. Breslin, Hamill, Al, all you motherfuckers ain't shit. And you need to go to fucking hell.